Jim Taylor back on the WRMJ Sportsline on this Saturday morning. Good to have you along and a fun in-studio guest today, Mr. Joe Thompson. Good morning, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you, Jim.
You have a quick turnaround today, right? Last night you were doing a MAC game, Norscott Bettendorf,
right?
And then this afternoon, mid-afternoon at the Genesis shootout at Augie.
Yes.
Life of a referee. Could you imagine doing anything different with your life right now?
Probably not. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, well, how many years? When was the first year you started?
I just know I'm on my 45th year.
45th year. So take us back. Do you remember the first season or the
My very first varsity game was at Woodhull. Walt Minder gave us a chance with my old original partner, Bob Berry, and we've just been kind of flying ever since.
Walt Minder.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess as we begin our conversation today, what has really changed, you think, about your profession?
The biggest change that I can think of off the top of my head is that the National Federation and the IHSA have made us kind of fashion police, so to speak. You know, they have all these odd rules as far as waistbands and what undergarments they can or can't wear and, you know, jewelry. It used to be we just went out there and the kids played ball.
So explain some of the nuances of those rules.
Well, they'll try to either roll down their waistband to make the short higher and then blouse their jersey out to hide it.
Now, what is the motivation for the rule, I guess? Do you know or not?
All they say is that they want the uniform worn as intended. That's all they tell us. it's bad in girls because, you know, of piercings and things like that. And so it's,
so if somebody doesn't abide by that, is it a warning or how does that? And I know that's probably the captain's meeting and the coach's meeting before the game that you go over that.
Yeah, we try to observe them during warm-ups and see if anybody appears to be in violation and just tell the coach and leave it in their hands from there, kind of some preventative officiating so we don't have to take action during a contest.
All right, so when you have done this now, how many years?
45.
45 years. So what keeps you going?
Well, in my personal position, Jim, to be quite honest with you, I planned my retirement so carefully. I've got to do this till I croak.
but so now that gives people ammunition when they see you officiating, saying you're only doing it for a paycheck, Thompson.
Well, probably true.
No, come on.
No, probably true. But you know, it doesn't really make any difference what level or how good or how bad a couple teams are. Every time you blow the whistle, half the people are happy and half aren't.
You think that's true?
I do.
Yeah, but some of the rules, some of the calls you make, though, they're not.
Well, always with a block charge.
Yeah. Well, and basketball is always I was thinking about this today. You know, in terms of the subjectivity of, like, being a sports official, I think the second-guessing, the most second-guessing that occurs with officiating is basketball officiating because everybody thinks they know what, you know, how the rules are interpreted, to be interpreted, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you look at football, and the only complaint like football you ever get that the fan wants to complain about is one call, pass interference.
Yeah.
That's basically it. But basketball, you know it. Come on, man. 3 seconds in the lane, the backcourt violation, over the back, that kind of stuff, right?
And you know, people don't understand the over and back call if somebody.
Yeah, and explain that to our listening audience because that is the most misinterpreted call by the fans now.
Well, somebody can pick up the ball at half court until all 3 points, which means both feet and the ball, are over the line. It's not over and back, and that's highly misunderstood by the general public, so to speak. So,
in terms of the 44 years or 45 years you've done it, what do you feel about sideline behavior among coaches? Is it pretty constant, or is it get better or get worse, or are there just certain years that are worse than others?
Well,
and I guess it depends. You can say, I guess it depends who the officiating crew is too.
We went through a period there where they had what they call the seatbelt rule, where they couldn't stand, And then they gradually gave him that small coach's box, which now goes clear to the baseline. That's brought back a little more chirping and whine time and complaining, but I think it's pretty standard. I mean, I can think back to the Duncan Reed, Jerry Leggett days, and in conjunction with some of them now, and it hasn't changed a whole lot. And if they want a technical, they get it.
the question is, if you had to do it all over again, knowing what the culture is today, would you do it? Say you're Joe Thompson 45 years ago and it's 2018, would you get in this profession?
I probably would, Jim. I'm fairly hard-headed, and I'm not easy to work for somebody. I've always liked to work for myself, so to speak, and I'm probably about the only one that can stand me.
So as you watch, I'm always interested. I mean, we're all fans at heart.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe Thompson at home on a Saturday night watching, okay, I'll give you for example, Northern Iowa's playing Iowa tonight in whatever they call it, Hy-Vee Shootout or whatever that thing is in Iowa and Des Moines today. So how do you watch the game?
I watch the officials.
You watch the officials in what?
Well, you know, kind of second guess them, I guess, so to speak, being a fan. You know, there's some of them that aggravate me somewhat. I probably shouldn't drop names,
you second guess Teddy Valentine too, eh?
That's exactly who I was going to say. He likes to, in my opinion, be the show. And, you know, basically, particularly in high school basketball, we're supposed to blend in. The highest compliment you could ever get is after a ball game and you shower and you decide to go with your buddies and have some pizza and beer somewhere, and a couple parents with some of the kids are in there with the team and they don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
You know.
But they know who Joe Thompson is.
Oh,
come
no.
On, man.
I'm not like Marty Flaherty. I'm not out there, I'm not out there selling myself.
Yeah. All right. So I know in the summers I've run into you like it. Summer league stuff, some of the different things where you don't take an active role maybe in officiating games, but you kind of serve as like an oversight, I think, some of the places. How important are those type of situations for people getting into officiating? And, you know, kind of turning it around and providing some mentorship to people that are getting in the profession. Did you get that back in the day, or is that something new in the profession? And how important? And I guess probably more of that needs to be done.
Yeah, it's been in about 30 years now, Jim, and it's I'm one of the active in a couple sports IHSA clinicians, so I'm able to observe and watch them work and give them some tips. And I don't mind giving that back to the game because the sports have been very good to me. I guess the only aggravation I ever have at teaching at some of these clinics is the fact you'll give somebody some feedback and they'll say, well, the reason I do it this way is because, well, I don't give a damn. You're doing it wrong. So. But I do enjoy that part.
So then those officials, when they ask you why am I not getting some of the bigger games, your answer is, well, because I tried to tell you and you won't listen to me.
Well, no, I don't want to be that prima donna, but I just, you know, I tell them on some of your mechanics, you need to stand in front of a mirror and watch practice, make some calls. Every time, are you stopping the clock when you blow your whistle? You know, the hand's supposed to be in the air, whether it's an open palm for a violation, a timeout, a foul. You stop the clock. And that seems to be one of the biggest inadequacies that we have in younger guys.
Now, the continuing education aspect of all this, like if you're a patched IHSA official, like what is there like a continuing type of certification you have to go through? How does that work?
Well, once you apply to become an official with the IHSA, excuse me, you have to have recommendations from some officials and from a coach, and they'll send out and ask, is there any reason why this person should not be considered to be an official? Do you know anything about this person? You know, so they do kind of screen that, and of course now they do background checks on all officials as far as if you have any felonies or
you got criminal background.
Yeah, they have to be careful with that kind of liability nowadays, but Once approved, they have to go to a clinic within that first year. And then all officials, including myself, have to attend one within every 3 years.
Okay.
You get what they call PowerPoints. That goes toward, you know, a 40 would be perfect, but it goes toward, you know, different categories, and PowerPoints on the clinic is one of them. And if you go every year, you keep that PowerPoint at a 5. If you go the second year, it's down to a 3. If you go the third year, it's down to a 1. So if you go every year, it shows you have some desire to climb the ladder and search for some of that postseason trail that everybody seems to have a passion for.
Now, this is the thing that you bring up about, like, the assignments of officials as it relates to postseason assignments. So this is, like, the part of the discussion that we can get a little more in-depth in. All right, so this is one of my pet peeves about postseason assignments. Like, football, they assign the crews.
Mm-hmm.
They don't assign a line judge with this crew with a linesman and a referee and an umpire with another crew.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the crew that's assigned, right?
Correct.
Along the state tournament trail in football.
Correct.
And I realize football's treated kind of differently than everybody else because of the way the postseason is set up for high school football. Well, for basketball officiating, it's the individual is assigned with two other individuals.
Right.
And some people will say, well, you're losing the continuity of that crew working together. Am I true to say that there are certain nuances if you keep a three-man crew together that they're accustomed and comfortable working with one another? That's better than going hodgepodge and assigning three officials together that haven't worked with one another. I don't know.
Without a doubt. I mean, you become comfortable with your crew. Every time a whistle blows, the other two knows what that partner has. There's not a more insecure feeling out there than to have somebody blow a whistle and they're reporting a foul and a kid saying to you, what happened? I don't know. I'm watching to see what he's reporting, you know.
That doesn't give the coach on the sideline any ammunition then, probably.
No. And I think they should consider doing more of that. I think if you have good crews, that's how you're related. I mean, if you have a, I would venture to say that coaches that evaluate officials following a contest or a week after the contest or whatever, I would bet you, Jim, they all get the same rating.
Yeah.
So if you've got a weak link, you may all three get a bad rating.
And is that then how the evaluation process works online for the IHSA? Do they evaluate the crew then that's working, or do they
evaluate the crew in football, but the individual official in basketball?
It is in the individual. Now, how does that work in terms of the evaluation process? Are they required to do that after every game or a certain number of games, coaches?
They like to have them do it within 24 hours.
Of every game or not?
Yes, but they don't.
So you know what the participation process would be in that? So if a team plays 33 games, how many times do you think that coach evaluates each game? They're not required to do so.
I used to have those stats because I'm on the summer officials conference committee, and Sam Knox gives that out. And I want to say it's like 66-67% do it. But
of every game,
yeah.
So how does it work? What is the evaluation? You know what? So is it like is there like 10 type of questions you rank one through? How does the evaluation
work? It's 1 through 5
for different categories.
Yes, and they're very broad rules, knowledge, application, even appearance. I can't think of the 5 because we don't get to do that for coaches. They get to rate us, but we don't get to rate them.
So you're saying that officials should be able to rate the coaches?
Well, you know. And
too bad, Hutton. You're going to get in trouble, man.
And even though they call us independent contractors, they have a thumb on us. And, you know, really the IHSA's hands tied. They can threaten schools and say this or that or say, well, if your coach doesn't get this percentage of ratings in, you're not going to get a host any postseason or you'll be out of consideration or whatnot. But let's face it, who is the IHSA's boss? The schools.
Yeah.
So
Do you like how the evaluation format is now, or do you wish it would be fine-tuned and there'd be some
consideration? I don't think there's any perfect way of doing it. College is much more technical about that kind of thing, and as well they should be. There's big money involved.
Yeah.
But
So then, like, the other thing that I've always wondered about with this, and I don't know if it's, like, more of an unwritten rule, but it's really a written rule, is officials can only go to work, and I'm talking about basketball here, they can only be assigned to work at the state tournament 3 times.
That's right? An unwritten rule.
But it's pretty much true, right?
Well, it's actually... It appears the way it's going with that administrator that's in charge of basketball, it appears it's going down to 2.
Oh, wow.
So.
Now, I did see one thing that I really appreciated. Somebody tweeted out this week about the IHSA. Sam Knox officiates games.
Yeah, he just did a game.
That's awesome.
At Canton, I believe. Mm-hmm.
So, do you get out to games at the younger levels?
I do. I just took over the city of Galesburg's youth basketball program, the Western Illinois Youth Basketball. I'm having some second thoughts about it because...
Well, because that is tough to officiate.
Well, they want me to get the officials and stuff, and then I try to go around on a Saturday morning and watch some of them,
yeah,
and make sure they were there. So, I'm kind of in the fold in case of a so-called emergency, but, you know, I was painted a rosy picture that it was just the Galesburg thing. Well... Heck, I've got to get officials for Alexis and two Bushnell sites in Monmouth. Rova,
yeah,
all over the place. I'm going, wow, you know.
Yeah, so
we're fine-tuning that and getting it.
Yeah, but those are tough. Those are tough games to officiate because when you're talking about kind of level of play, the age, and trying to figure out how should some of these games be called, what should I kind of let go, what should I, and how much of a teachable moment it is.
Third grade girls basketball, if you called every travel and jump ball.
But grandma and grandpa,
yeah.
that's the problem you get into. And that's why people won't stay in the profession a long time, because of what you just mentioned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you have to have a feel for it. And I'll also tell you this. If you have some good rules knowledge and some good mechanical skills at that level, by golly, if you can work that, you can work anything.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the higher the level, the easier it is to work.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I don't know if it was last year or a couple years ago, I had John Elder in here one Saturday morning.
Wonderful
and,
man.
And we were talking about kind of the culture change of going to games, all right? And he said basically, you know, when he reflects on his career, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but, you know, like primarily when he coached in the 60s, all right? He said basically dad would go to the game maybe, okay? Get in the 70s, you know, mom starts going to the game. Get to the 80s, maybe grandpa starts coming to the game. Get to the 90s. Grandpa, 2000s, aunt, uncle, nieces, nephews, whatever. And then they're all there specifically for one person. And they want to see how the coach relates to that one person there to see and if they play. And then the same for officiating. Because I'd say a lot of the behavior you see at some of these youth level games, it may not necessarily be mom and dad, but it may be somebody that's related to mom and dad.
Sure.
And the big thing about the youth leagues, I say, you know, it's not so much the officials in terms of being there. It's what protections do you have in place to protect those officials that are working in terms. And by that, I'm not saying, you know, armed guards. I'm just talking about the organizational group that's in charge monitoring people that are being complete freaking idiots and saying, you're done. Get out. There's no warning. There is no warning. You act like a complete idiot, you're gone. And the one thing about these youth leagues, you know, that I've been removed from it for about 10 years, but I think one of the things that needs to be done for that is there needs to be some type of precursor where you're telling the kids and their parents that, hey, we're not putting up with this when we play in these leagues. So you need to let your in-laws or your mom and dad, your grandparents, your nieces and nephews, if you act like an idiot, and you know what acting like an idiot is, where you're yelling at the official for some dumb reason, there's no warning. You're gone. So you need to be aware of that.
And a lot of times that onus falls on the official because the person in charge of that particular gym could be a high school girl.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's why there needs to be the oversight. And then that person that's officiating, are they going to continue to officiate? The answer is probably no.
Probably not, yeah. And we do lose. I mean, the retention is less than 50% on new officials that apply. It might be in the 30s.
That's so, not good.
No. But
and that's why you say...
Do it, and they get some good money, like when they're in college and stuff, and then once they become a professional in whatever their avocation is, they either do or don't have enough time or do and don't need the money or, you know, whatever factors, or practically what I hear from most of them is I just don't want to hear this crap anymore. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Well, we're talking with our good friend, Joe Thompson. He worked North Scott Bettendorf last night. He's over at the Genesis Shootout at Augie today. We're going to let him take a couple of swigs of water. He brought his dog in today, our first Sportsline guest that ever brought in a dog to the WRMJ studios. Folks, that's Americana. Folks, that is small market radio through and through. We'll have more coming up with our good friend Joe Thompson. It's the WRMJ Sportsline on this Saturday morning.
Most people understand the need for life insurance, but not many want to talk about why it's essential to your financial plan. It may seem intimidating, but it doesn't have to be. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started with Country Financial. Your Country Financial representative will work with you to find life insurance that gives you the protection you need at a price you can afford.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
John Waugh.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
And in Moline, see me, Steve Sim.
Life insurance policies issued by Country Life Insurance Company and Country Investors Life Assurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Your jobs are piling up faster than the leaves and snow. So how are you going to take on what Mother Nature throws at you? On a John Deere 1 Family or 3E Series tractor, that's how. With quick hitch capabilities, you can add rear or front snow blades, a snowblower, and a bundle of other attachments. Work better, faster, and more comfortably this year on a John Deere tractor. Come by your local Martin Sullivan dealership and see why nothing runs like a deer.
I'm on my feet a lot this time of year. I have to go down chimneys for my work.
What do you do?
Delivery business.
Well, let's custom measure you. Then I'll give you some great options for a perfect fit.
Something in red would be ideal.
Get happy feet, give happy feet when you visit Drew at 6140 Run. He carries an incredible selection of the top shoe brands available. And right now, when you buy a $100 gift card, he'll even throw in a free pair of Saucony socks.
What do you think? They go with the hat?
Perfectly. 6140 Run, next to the Downtown Y in Galesburg.
Hey, what's taking you so long?
I'm tied up ordering supplies. This from there, that from here.
You know, office specialists have everything your office needs, and they're fast, friendly, and affordable.
Office specialists can really handle everything?
You name it. Toilet paper, floor mats, paper towels, vacuum cleaners, even stuff for the break room. And ordering is simple at osi.biz. They offer reliable weekly free delivery, and a sales consultant visits the office to answer questions and take orders. You just can't beat the personal service of a locally owned one-stop shop.
That's Office Specialists in Galesburg.
It's the other driver's fault. It's your fault. It's nobody's fault. Just the way winter driving can be. No matter how you end up in the ditch or where you're stranded or why, Brad's Collision and Towing is there for you 24/7. They've got your back when you need them the most. They sound like superheroes, you say? Nah, they're just guys. But getting you and your car out of harm's way is just one of the things they do, and they do it so well. Call Brad's Collision and Towing, 582-2413. That's 582-2413.
All right, back on the WRMJ Sportsline on this Saturday morning, talking to longtime official Joe Thompson, 45 years in the business. He also does high school softball as well. We see him around the diamond in the spring. Thick skin. How much thick skin do you have to have?
I think the older I get, the less I have.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. There has to be some though crossing of the line where you can have thick skin, but there has to be kind of the stop sign that you put up to people too and say, nope, you crossed the line.
Yeah, there is. And it also depends on how personal they get. So, but, you know, a big difference between the various sports. I mean, if you're doing a volleyball match, which I do a lot of volleyball and I work state, all you have to do is give a stern look, and they're like a shrinking violet on the sidelines. You know, they just pulled down into their seat. Softball, you know, a little bit of bickering here and there. I do mostly college softball, but on my off weekdays, I'll do high school. But they're good for the most part. I can't remember the last ejection I've had now.
In softball, really?
Yeah. So it's been pretty good. Basketball's a different animal.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
I think because they're probably complaining at a farther distance. You know, if I'm at first base and they're in the third base dugout, I can't really make out what they're saying or hollering about, and nor do I care.
As opposed to basketball, then? Where
basketball, you go up and down the court and they're in your ear. And you know who it is. And I guess one of my biggest pet peeves is an assistant coach that acts like they're a head coach, and they're up, and they're not supposed to stand. Coach,
yeah.
I'm warning you, he's going to hurt your team. Sit him down. I'll listen to you. I'm not listening to him. You know, because let's face it, a lot of the bigger schools have four or five assistants sitting there on the bench. I don't need to deal with all of
them.
That's why you're the head coach.
What about player behavior? Is that pretty good, or what do you think about that?
I think it's deteriorating.
Now, is it, when I talk about that, is it player against player, or is it player against player saying things to the officials? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, probably player against player.
Is it?
I mean,
Now, by words or by...
Already this season we've had to throw a couple of players with their second technical out of the game, and they have to go to the locker room with a coach.
Now that's because they're getting into it with another player? Or they're doing
well, maybe the first technical was they slammed the ball down on the floor to try to see how close it could get to hit the ceiling,
yeah,
which is a very simple call, and then there might be some taunting and baiting or trying to incite some kind of action that would cause another one. A lot of slamming the ball down anymore. I don't know why we're seeing that, but we are. Have removed four fans from games already this year. Four fans from four different contests.
Really?
Yeah.
So then what is the repercussion for that fan then? Are they identified, and then are they not allowed to come back, or how does that work?
Well, each school,
you're probably saying, oh, God, I just saw this guy again. I just removed him a couple weeks ago.
Well, each school has a different process
That brings up a good point.
Some have zero tolerance.
Well, you're but done. Should there be a uniform policy?
Probably. I think the most standard one I know is they're suspended from all contests at that school for 3 games.
Okay, you know? But this brings up the interesting point about officiating then.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be responsible for removing that fan, or should the administrator in charge be
responsible? On-site administrator has that, and we're normally identified who it is. And most of the games, the athletic director
says. What I'm saying is, should you have to police the crowd?
Should it
be done before that?
Well, sometimes I'll admit they don't have enough time. I mean, I can remember a guy hollering at the top of his lungs in an empty gym and saying, oh, you missed the first foul before that, which the foul must have been on his son or something.
Yeah, and you're talking about the 8:30 game here in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's bellowing up there, and I turn to see who it is, and he's got his arms up. And I say, you got a problem? And he goes, well, you should have. And I said, get him out of here.
Make him walk, take the walk of shame.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it embarrasses the kid that they're there watching, you know. But I just, as we talked about earlier, I think that is what is causing us to lose numbers. In some sports, it's in emergency mode, having enough officials to even cover games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm at the point of my career now, Jim. I don't have to worry about saying, oh, God, I don't want to do this because I may never work here again.
Yeah.
Do the job. Make them behave. make it easier on our younger ones we're trying to develop.
Yeah, but it's easier for you to say that because you have credibility, though, because you've done it for so long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, to a degree. In the eyes of fans, an official's an official, no matter how long.
Yeah, well, that's true. Do you like, though, because I think the Three Rivers has an assigner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does the LTC? Do you like that? Do you like the process of the assigner, or would you rather leave it up to the school? Now, for me, the assigner would seem more of a fair way to do it because you can't say, well, this school's trying to hire these same officials every game. I mean, do you like it that way? Do you think that's way conferences should have assigners?
I do. I definitely do. And it takes the onus off the AD. You know, it used to be in the old days when they hired their own, people come up, where the hell did you get these guys?
Yeah, I know.
You know, now you can say, I have nothing to do with it. We have an assigner that takes care of all that. So then
from the assigner standpoint, then, I would assume then some of these officiating organizations become a little more important in terms of trying to find officials to fill games, and therefore that kind of serves its own purpose where those officiating organizations kind of serve as mentor groups.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore it makes the organization stronger, the officiating organizations that are involved to try to get people to officiate, but then you get your foot in the door there, and then if your foot is in the door there, then your foot is in the door with some of these conferences. Is that...
Well, that's a fair assessment. I do quite a bit of assigning myself. And some people still do assigning with a spiral notebook and post-it notes and stuff like that. But I am on a website called Arbiter, and everything's listed there, and the schools can see the names, addresses. They can see the pictures of the guys that are coming. They can up the fees in there, how much their accounting department has to pay. So it's very easy that way. And I also think that, you know, who knows the officials better than another official?
Yeah. So what is the fee for a varsity game? Is that standard everywhere?
No.
So, like, what is the fee for a Lincoln Trail Conference varsity game?
Lincoln Trail varies.
Is that set by each school?
Well, they used to, if I remember right, they used to have it where you had to pay no more than this, okay? But now, you know, you'll have the fresh, soft, and the varsity that you're responsible for in most Lincoln Trail games. And Princeville pays very well. Galva went up to 100. You've got...
That's if you do both games.
Yeah, that's both games. Now, you're allowed to hire runners, so to speak, that can come and you can mentor them while they're doing the sophomore game. But those are far and few between. We're finding ourselves working two games. Galva 100, Weathersfield 90... Rova like 75.
So, and that's working both games.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you do Friday night games, like you did North Scott, Bettendorf last night, you do the varsity game or you do the sophomore game too?
No, just the varsity.
So then are you responsible for then finding the sophomore crew, or does that's from the assigner?
The assigner does all that.
So do you get there early enough to watch are you supposed to get there early enough to watch the sophomore game and watch the sophomore crew working or not?
We're not supposed to, we're not required to. We like to, just to unwind, get off the road. The last two nights have been heck in the fog, you know.
Yeah.
So get there and relax. The one partner of mine and Brett Brewington and myself, we love to have a bag of popcorn. So it's kind of our staple every night of games. And watch the guys. And you know, if we know them or if we don't, if they say we go in the locker room and to change and they're coming in after the game, if they say you see anything, sure, we'll offer some feedback, but if you don't ask, we don't, because some people don't like being critiqued.
Well, what do you think of overall? Give me the state of officiating right now, like in this area, in this state. How good is it good? Are you concerned about it? What? Just give me a, like, overall Joe Thompson state of officiating 2018, 2019.
I think it's good. I think it's very good right now, but... Your average age of varsity officials in Illinois is 50. You know, am I going to be around in 5 years? Probably doubt it.
Oh, wait a minute, Joe. Come on.
Well, I did say I have to do this till I croak.
You brought your seeing eye dog with you today. Yeah, come on. All right, so you feel good about it.
I feel good about it now.
I mean, I'm talking about the quality of it, not necessarily like the numbers.
Right.
The quality of officiating, where if you go to a game and you're at watch and you're like, yeah, that crew's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, and the appealing thing, too, is like the MAC and the Western Big Six, they're on the same page as far as pay. It's $85 for the varsity game only. You know, so that's decent pay.
All right, so I know this hasn't involved basketball, all right, but we talk about, like, the review process in we always, like, see the trickle-down now where people that when they watch games on TV – you know, booth review, things of that nature. All right. So there's been a couple of cases in Illinois. I know it's involved football. The two instances I think of were, it was 2 years ago in the playoff where the crew, I think, wrongly assessed an untimed down at the end of the game, and it prolonged the game, and it led to overtime, and then that team lost.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there was the playoff game this year, where a guy that was a patched official showed up in his officiating referee uniform that was not working the game, but he was interacting with the crew that was working that game. So there's been litigation filed where, you know, they want the injunction or they want the result reversed. And most people say, no, I never want to see that until something like that impacts them directly. So what about the review process as it relates to the result of a game? Where there, do you ever foresee that, or would you ever favor oversight of that? Because I know there's been IHSA bylaws that have been introduced. I think there was one this year by the school. Was it Oaklawn? I can't remember what school it was.
I believe it was.
Oaklawn Richards or whatever. I can't remember what the school was involved, but it was a famous case a couple of playoff years ago. But it never passes because most people say, oh, come on, man, sour grapes, whatever, blah, you had other chances to win. But then it happens to that school, and they're like, they want immediate response from basically the sanctioning agency, the IHSA, to reverse that result or reverse that call. So what about that?
I think you have to keep the human element in it. Do I see a replay coming for high school? Maybe if technology gets to the point where they can do it and do it inexpensively, but schools don't have money to do that.
Well, I could
that.
Only see that in a state tournament series.
Yeah.
Televised.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm talking
like
about
the situation you're talking about, the guy dressing up in his uniform being on a sideline, I think that's poor security at that site. I that's inexcusable.
Yeah, because when I read that story and they showed the picture, I'm like, he's actually got an officiating uniform on and he's interacting.
Well, I know a couple of people that carry their uniform in their trunk all the time in case somebody gets hurt or they're hurt and somebody
well,
doesn't show up.
That's a completely different thing, though. Where they
I
can,
know,
you know,
but
they
it's
can,
there, yeah. And they want to work the game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and my biggest pet peeve is the fan that's hollering at me and come to find out they're an official. You know, that's just an unspoken rule amongst the throngs that you do not do
that's
that.
Happened to you before?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Who what? No, just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
So getting back to that, so no oversight, no reversal, no basically the ruling on the field stands?
I think so. I think you're going to have to stay with the human element. I mean, we had a protest in a softball sectional last year that changed the outcome of the game. A girl was called out at first base, and the picture shows her clearly on the base, and the ball's 20 feet from the fielder.
Wow.
Called her out.
Now, was there like a just a complaint file with the IHSA, or was there actually a court?
There was no court action, but the picture was sent to the IHSA, and this guy happened to be bullheaded. You know, they said, well, appeal to your partner, see what he saw. Nope, my call, I'm not, nope.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, you know, if there's ever any question, I try to work with the coaches for the kids. I'm not going to be afraid to go and ask for help. I'm not perfect. If I was that good, I wouldn't be here in Central Illinois.
Yeah.
But
all right, so interesting. And that's going to be a topic that always draws conversation, in my opinion.
Right.
Because we always talk about the trickle-down of professional sports and college sports down to the low levels, and I know a shot clock is eventually coming for basketball.
I was just going to say.
And the restricted area is coming, because I know all these courts that are doing the renovation, like Orion has the restricted area already on their court, so you know
just
eventually.
Just in case it's adopted.
Do you want that to come to the high school level? And the restricted area is the basically it's going to be a blocking call and not a charge. Under the
right. Hoop. Right.
And that's the old dotted line is what you call it.
Right.
You want to see shot clock and you want to see restricted area?
Shot clock I don't want to see, but I think it's going to come anyway. I mean, hell, I was against the three-point arc when it came in, but now I love it. Yeah. I'm not big on change.
I know what I need to ask you. So 44 years, when you first started then it was every time it was a jump ball?
Yes.
You had to love the alternating possession rule coming into effect then.
In girls basketball, it was a godsend.
Well, I think about that when I, you know, played junior high, man, every tie-up was a jump ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine if that was still the way the game was played today?
Wonderful, wonderful adoption.
All right, here's another thing I want to get into here. We got about 5-7 minutes left. You know, one of the favorite buzzwords I always hear, and it has something to do normally with the result, winner or loser. And then the loser always talks about, in a lot of these instances, poor sportsmanship with the winner. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I want to talk about student sections and about, you know, a lot of people when they talk about NFL and they use the word NFL No Fun League. And the one thing that bothers me, and I want your interpretation and your reaction as an official, with some of these student sections that are out to have a good time, you know, make noise. No, I'm not talking about artificial noisemakers. You can't do that. I'm not talking about obscene gestures. Can't do that. I'm not talking about racial epithets or obscene language. No, I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about creative fun. Where kids are making noise, even when kids are shooting free throws, I think, to me, that's not poor sportsmanship. That's a part of the game. And giving the other team the business and having fun on a Friday night. But sometimes I go to these games and I see administrators or I see whoever trying to police kids having fun. And again, I'm saying obscene language, no. Mm-hmm. Obscene gestures, no. You know, those type of things, no. But kids having fun, making noise, whatever, that's not poor sportsmanship.
No.
Giving the other team a little bit of business or whatever.
That's enthusiasm.
Yes. And I see people trying to curb the enthusiasm, and then in the same breath, people say, well, why aren't kids going to games anymore to support their fellow students?
And sometimes it could be the official that's asking an administrator, hey, would you tone them down? It's ridiculous unless it falls into the bad categories that you mentioned before. But we had a wonderful, both teams last night had wonderful student sections. Had two administrators standing in each corner of those student sections to patrol if there was anything going bad.
I
like that.
Well, but I mean, like,
but okay. they weren't stopping them from rooting and cheering.
Yes,
but like
kids like having like the newspapers up.
That's when the
opposing team is
that's not bad
starting,
sportsmanship.
No, or their backs are turned.
That's
you know,
not bad sportsmanship.
Some people say they're terrible. I can't believe that school.
I know.
And then it's the same thing when they lose. It's like they're you know poor sportsmanship. Blah blah blah. I was going to ask you, what about rushing the court? I'm talking about like a last second shot. I don't have a problem with that as long as the safety. Is there coming to celebrate?
I don't have a problem either, as long as I don't get
run over,
sidecocked to going off the floor. You know, I, you know, and in fact, we're such a as you well know, and all your listening audience knows, we're such a socially sensitive society anymore.
Yeah.
You have to be so careful what you say or do. You could say something perfectly innocent, and it's just misconstrued to the point it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but and that's why I'm saying from a student standpoint. Like,
I mean, you should have seen us. You know, I graduated from high school in the early 70s, and there was not as much to do then as there is now for kids.
Yeah.
And we went to every Galesburg basketball game, and we let John Thiel do our cheering. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but and that's the thing, though, about letting the kids, you know, blow off a little steam.
Absolutely.
On the student section, to have fun. And some of the times, things I see with some of the administrators are telling the kids to knock it off, like the old UUU thing when you get a foul. You can't hardly do that anymore.
No, I know.
I'm like, what? Come on. And I'm like, I think the kids that play kind of want to hear that stuff.
And it doesn't bother me. And then, oh, come on, ref, what are you watching?
Yeah.
But some people are sensitive to that. So I don't think there's any sport that if you want to take it on, that you if you have rabbit ears, you're in the wrong profession.
Yeah. All right. Well, Joe Thompson, it's always fun to converse with you.
Great to
always
see
great
you.
Great to see you. And keep it up and keep working with those young officials. And if you need to put people in line, put them in line. Mm-hmm. Right? You need to do that.
I do.
And the coaches, too. So
yep.
I know we you were in the middle of, like, stamping your Christmas cards that you were preparing for all the lovely coaches you work with that you're
yeah,
you're
right.
Gonna send out, yeah. And they're sending out to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I get a million of them. No.
All right. So you're and your partners today. You work with.
My partners are Aaron Furrow and Brett Brewington, both from.
And how long have you worked with both of them?
Brett was on the crew earlier, chose a different profession that took him out of state, and then he came back, and we lost a partner. But I've been blessed to have very good partners, and I'm a true believer in partners for continuity. So.
Yeah, and I told people today, when my segments come up with my broadcast partners, when people get in this business, I'm talking about the broadcast business, one of the most important lessons I learned early in the business is understanding the games you broadcast, the rules of the games you broadcast. And that's why I've always reached out to officials, because there's a lot of things that I've got wrong over the years that I'm like, help me interpret this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for people in the media to have these relationships with the officials so you can understand.
Jimmy, you're a champion in the small radio market, especially for the student athletes of Illinois, and I've dealt with you both in the gym, outside the field, and through the IBCA, the Illinois Basketball Hall of Fame, and you do a tremendous job, and I appreciate that, and I know all the fellow officials do. So.
Yeah, and we each attach our bibs in the hospitality room so we don't spill barbecue sauce on our clothes.
Yeah, especially on your white stripe.
Yeah. All right, good to see you, sir. Merry Christmas.
You too.
I know we'll see you on the tournament trail, I think, at Western. Macomb will probably run into you down there, right?
Yeah.
That's a good tournament.
Yeah, it's a great tournament.
All right, good to see you, sir.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
We'll see Joe Thompson. He's working today at the Genesis Shootout, the 4:15 game. Thanks to Joe Thompson. More coming up on Sportsline on WRMJ.